Ruthen cut in. "I now think you all did," she said, "to look across into the eyes of the crippled god, to look and to feel. But you couldn't do it kindly, could you? Could you, Fist Sort? Lostara, any of you?" "And what of you?" kindly snapped. "Not a chance." "So she knocked us all down. What was the point of that?" "Why shouldn't she?" Ruthengard retorted. "You asked for more from her, and then I nailed her to a damned tree with that madness about serving her. She struck back, and that, friends, was the most human moment from the adjunct I've yet seen." He faced them. "Until then, I was undecided. Would I stay on? Would I ride out, away from all this? And if I left, well, it's not as though anyone could stop me, is it?"
"But," said Faradan Sort, "here you are."
"Yes, I'm with her now for as long as she needs me."
Fist kindly raised one hand as if to strike out at Ruthengard.
"But why? You still don't get it, none of you. Listen, we don't dare look across into the eyes of a suffering god, but kindly, she dares. You asked for more from her. God's below, what more can she give? She'll feel all the compassion none of you can afford to feel. Behind that cold iron, she will feel what we can't."
His eyes went flat on kindly. "And you asked for more." The stones ticked in the heat. A few insects spun on glittering wings. Ruthengard turned to Faradan Sort.
"Your regulars are not saying anything? Be relieved, Fist. Maybe they're finally realizing, on some instinctive level, what she's taken from them, what she's holding inside for safekeeping, the best they have."
Faradan Sort shook her head.
"Now who is the one with too much faith, Ruthengard?"
He shrugged. "It's hot out here."
They watched as he headed off, a lone figure trudging back to the pickets and the camp beyond. There was no dust in the air. This desert didn't make dust. Eventually, kindly turned to Lostariel.
"Did you suspect he was about to bolt?"
"What? No. The man's a damned cipher, Fist."
"How," asked Faradan, "is this going to work? When I need to stiffen the spines of my soldiers, what in Hood's name can I say to them?"
After a moment, Lostariel cleared her throat and said,
"I don't think you have to tell them anything, Fist." "What do you mean? And don't go spewing out Ruthen's words. He places far too much in the hearts and minds of the common soldier. Just because your life is devoted to killing, it doesn't accord you any special wisdom."
"I don't agree with that," Lostara said. "Look, just by standing with her, with the adjunct, you're saying all that needs saying. The real threat to this army is Fist Blistig, who's hardly kept secret his opposition to the adjunct, and by extension to all of you. If he starts gathering followers, well, that's when the trouble will start."
Kindly reached up and wiped the sweat from his brow.
"There is wisdom, Faradan. The wisdom that comes with knowing, right to the very core of your soul, just how fragile life really is. You earn that wisdom when you take someone else's life."
"And what about the ones who don't think twice about it? Wisdom? Hardly. More like a growing taste for it. That dark rush of pleasure that's so addictive."
She looked away.
"I know. I stood the wall."
Lostara pointed.
"There's a runner coming. For one of us."
They waited until the thin, round-faced soldier arrived. A soldier with mutilated hands. He saluted with the right one and proffered kindly a wax tablet with the other.
"Compliments of Lieutenant Master Sergeant Quartermaster Paws, sir."
Kindly took the tablet and studied it.
"Soldier," he said.
"Sir?"
"The sun's heat has melted the wax. I do hope you committed the message to memory."
"Sir, I have."
"Let's hear it."
"Sir, the missive was private."
"From Paws? I really don't have time for this. We're past all the dueling. Spit it out, soldier."
"Sir? To quote, private missive from Lieutenant Master Sergeant Field Quartermaster Paws to Fist Kindly. Warmest salutations and congratulations on your promotion, sir. As one might observe from your advancement, and indeed mine, cream doth rise, etc. Inasmuch as I am ever delighted in corresponding with you, discussing all manner of subjects in all possible idioms, alas, this subject is rather more official in nature. In short, we are faced with a crisis of the highest order. Accordingly, I humbly seek your advice and would suggest we arrange a most private meeting at the earliest convenience. Yours affectionately, Paws.
The soldier then saluted again and said,
I'm to wait your answer, sir.
In the bemused silence that followed, Faradan sought narrowed her eyes on the soldier.
You were heavy infantry, weren't you?
Corporal Himble Thrupp, Fist.
How stands the rank and file, soldier?
Standing true, Fist.
Do the enlisted say much about the adjunct, soldier? Off the record here.
The watery eyes flicked momentarily to her, then away again.
Occasionally, sir.
And what do they say?
Not much, sir. Mostly it's all them rumours.
You discuss them?
No, sir. We chew 'em up till there's nothing left, and then invent new ones, sir.
To sow dissension?
Brows lifted beneath the rim of the helm.
No, Fist. It's, entertainment. Beats boredom, sir. Boredom leads to laziness, sir, and laziness can get a soldier up and kilt. Or the one beside him, which is e'en worse. We hate being bored, sir, that's all.
Kindly said, tell Paws to find me at my command tent, whenever he likes.
Sir.
Dismissed, soldier. The man saluted a third time, wheeled and set off. Kindly grunted.
That's a heavy for you, Faradan Sort muttered,
and then snorted,
inventing nasty rumours for fun.
They're only nasty, I suppose, once someone decides one's for real.
If you say so kindly. As for my regulars, well, now I know where the barrage is coming from, even if it is coming down on them, observed Lostara Yil. From what you said, it's not stirring up much dust.
Faradan met Kindly's eyes.
Are we panicking over nothing, Kindly?
To be honest, he admitted, I don't really know any more. Ruthan Gud drew off his gambeson and paused to luxuriate in the sudden escape from unbearable heat as his sweat-slicked skin cooled.
Well, said Scannero from her cot, that woke me up.
My godlike physique?
The smell, Ruthan.
Ah, thank you, woman. You've left me positively glowing.
He unclipped his sword belt and let it fall to the ground, then slumped down on the edge of his cot and settled his head in his hands. Scannero sat up.
Another one?
Through his fingers, he said, not sure how many more of those she can weather.
We're barely 2 days into the desert, Ruthan. I hope she's tougher than you think.
He let his hands fall and glanced at her.
So do I.
He studied her for a moment and then said, I should probably tell you I was considering leaving.
Oh,
not you, this army.
Ruthan, I'm in this army.
I planned on kidnapping you.
I see.
He sighed.
Today she changed my mind. So, my love, we're in this till the bitter end.
If that's a marriage proposal, I kind of like it.
He studied her.
Gods, I'd forgotten.
Loud clattering came from behind the cook tents, where the scullions were scrubbing pots with handfuls of rocks and pebbles. Cuttle cinched tight a strap on his kit bag. Straightening, he arched his back and winced.
Gods, it's a young'un's game, ain't it just? Horik, you giving up on those?
The Seti half-blood had thrown his military-issue hobnailed boots to one side and was using a rounded stone to work out the creases in a pair of worn tribal moccasins.
Too hot, he said.
Won't those get cut to shreds?
Smiles asked from where she sat on her pack.
You start limping, Corrick. Don't look to me for help.
Toss the boots onto the wagon, Cuttle said. Just in case, Corrick.
The man shrugged. Sergeant Tarr returned from the company command tent.
Finish loading up, he said. We're getting a quick start here.
He paused.
Anybody managed to sleep?
Silence answered him. Tarr grunted.
Right. I doubt it'll be the same come tomorrow. It's a long haul ahead of us. Weapons fit to use, everybody? Short nose?
The heavy looked up, small eyes glittering in the gloom.
Yeah.
Korab? Aye, Sergeant. Can still hear her moaning from the whetstone. It ain't a woman, said Smiles. It's a sword. Then why's she moaning? You never heard a woman moan in your life, so how would you know? Sounds like a woman. I don't hear any moaning anyway, she replied, drawing out a brace of fighting knives. Weapons good, Sergeant. Just give me some sweet flesh to stick 'em in. Hold the thought, Tar advised. For, like, 5 months, Smiles. Korik looked up, studied her from under his unbound hair. Can you do that? She sneered.
If it's going to take 5 months to cross this desert, idiot, we're deader than dead.
She wrapped one blade against the clay jug slung by braided webbing on her pack.
And I ain't drinking my own piss, neither. Won't mine?
Bottle asked from where he was lying, eyes closed, hands behind his head.
Is that an offer to swap? God's Bottle, you're sick, you know that?
Listen, if I have to drink it, better it be a woman's, because then, if I work real hard, I might be able to pretend I like it, or something.
When no one said anything, Bottle opened his eyes, sat up.
What?
Cuttle made to spit, checked himself and turned to Tar.
Fit of anything new to say, Sergeant?
No, why should he have?
Well, I mean, he figures we're going to make it across, right?
Tar shrugged. I suppose so.
Can't do that mission if we don't.
That's a fair point, Supper.
He say anything about all this drinking our own piss?
Tar frowned. Korik spoke up.
Sure he did, Cuttle. It's all in that deck of dragons of his. New card. Piss drinker. High house.
High house what?
Smiles asked. Korik simply grinned and then looked up at Cuttle and the smile became cold.
Card's got your face on it, Cuttle. Big as life.
Cuttle studied the half-blood, the ritual scarring and tattoos, all in the glyph language of the Seti that Korik probably only half understood. The ridiculous moccasins. His view was suddenly blocked and his gaze flicked up to meet Tar's dark, deceptively calm eyes.
Just leave it, the sergeant said in a low mutter.
Thought I was going to do something? Cuttle. Thought I was going to rip a few arseholes in him? Shove my last sharper up inside and then throw him into yonder wagon? Something like that, Sergeant?
From behind Tar, Korik snorted.
Load your pack on the wagon, Cuttle. Aye, Sergeant. Rest of you, get your gear up and get ready. The night beckons and all that.
I might sell my piss, said Smiles.
Yeah, said Korik. All that silver and gold, only it won't go on the wagon, Smiles. We need to keep the bed clear for all the booty we're going to scoop up. No, soldier, you got to carry it.
He pulled on the first moccasin, tugged the laces. Both strings of leather snapped in his hands. He swore. Cuttle heaved his pack onto the wagon's bed and then stepped back as Korab followed suit with his own gear, the others lining up. Korik coming last, wearing two untied moccasins. The sapper stepped past the corporal, Bottle, and then Smiles. His fist caught Korik flush on the side of the man's head. The crack was loud enough to make the oxen start. The half-blood thumped hard on the ground and did not move.
Well now, Tar said, glowering at Cuttle. Come the fight, and this soldier beside you, sapper, you going to step sure then?
Makes no difference what I done just now, Cuttle replied. Beside him, in the next battle, I ain't going to step sure at all. He mouthed off in the trench to fiddler himself, and he's been moping around ever since. You can have all the courage you want on the outside, but it ain't worth shit, Sergeant, when what's inside can't even see straight.
The speech had dried out his mouth. He lifted his right hand.
Gotta see a cutter now, Sergeant. I broke the fucker. You stupid! Go on, get out of my sight. Korab, Bottle, get Korik onto the wagon.
Wait, is he even alive?
All right, into the wagon. He probably won't wake up till the night's march is done.
Just his luck, muttered Smiles.
Horns sounded. The bone hunter stirred, shook out, fell back into column, and the march was underway. Bottle slipped in behind Korab, with Smiles on his left. Three strides in their wake walked Short Nose. Bottle's pack was light, most of his kit had gone into general resupply. And as was true of armies the world over, there was no such thing as oversupply, at least not when it came to useful gear. Useless stuff. Well, that's different. If we were back in Malaz or Seven Cities, we'd have plenty of that. Quills and no ink, clasps, but not a sewing kit to be found. Wicks and no wax. Still, wouldn't it be nice to be back in Malaz? Stop that, Bottle. Things are bad enough without adding pointless nostalgia to the unruly mess. In any case, he'd lost most of his useful gear, only to discover that he really didn't need it after all. The clay jug rolled in its webbing alongside his hip, swinging with each stride. Well, it made sense to me, anyway. I could always ask, I don't know, Flashwit, or, gods below, Masangilani. I'm sure she'd... Get up here beside me, Bottle. Sergeant? Fid wanted me to ask you some questions. We already went over what I remembered. Not that. Ancient history, Bottle. What battle was that again? Never mind. Drop back there, Korab. No, you're still Corporal. Relax, just need some words with Bottle here. Our squad mage, right? I'll be right behind you then, Sergeant. Thanks, Corporal. And I can't tell you how reassuring it is to feel your breath on the back of my neck, too. I ain't drunk no piss yet, Sergeant. Once past the Corporal, Bottle scowled back at him over a shoulder. Korab, why are you talking like Cuttle's dumber brother these days? I'm a Marine soldier, and that's what I am, and this is how us Marines talk. Like the Sergeant says, what battle was that again? Ancient history. We fight somebody? When? Like that, you see. The best Marines of all, Corporal, Tar drawled, are the ones who don't say a damned thing. Corporal Korab? Sorry, what, Sergeant? Like that? Perfect. Bottle could see Balm and his squad a dozen paces ahead. Throat slitter, dead smell, widdershins. That's it? That's all that's left of them? No Warrens around here, right? Sergeant? Oh, aye, none at all. These Fid's questions? So it's dead can be. Aye, like a sucked bone. Meaning, Tar resumed, no one can find us out here, right? Bottle blinked and then scratched at the stubble on his jaw. His nails came away flecked with burnt skin and something that looked like salt crystals. He frowned. Well, I suppose so, unless, of course, they've got eyes or wings, and he nodded upward. Breath gusted from Tar's nostrils, making a faint whistling sound. For that, they'd have to be out here, doing what we're doing, but this desert's supposed to be impassable. No one in their right minds would ever try and cross it. That's the view, isn't it? The view? It ain't opinion, Tar. It's a fact. No one in their right minds would try and cross it. Is there someone in particular, Sergeant, who might be trying to find us? Tar shook his head. Captain's the one with the deck, not me. But they'll be cold here, those cards. Lifeless. So what we're talking about is a reading he did before we crossed over. Was someone closing in, Sergeant? No point in asking me that, Bottle. Listen, this is ridiculous. If Fiddler wants to ask me stuff, he can just hump down here and do it. That way, I can ask stuff back. Are they blind, Bottle, is what Fid wanted to know. Not us, them. Them, aye. Wide-eyed blind, Tar grunted. Good. Sergeant, can you remember who came up with our name? Bone Hunters? Might have been the adjunct herself. The first time I heard it was from her, I think. But this is impossible. Aaron, she couldn't have known. Not then. Why, Bottle? No reason, just wondering. Is that it? Can me and the Corporal switch round again? One more question. Is Quick Ben alive? I already told Fid, this question ain't his, Bottle. It's mine. Listen, I don't know, and I told Fid the same thing. I got no sense with those people. Which people? Bridge burners. Those people.
Deadhedge, Quick Ben, even Fiddler himself. They aren't the same as us, as you and me, Sergeant, or Korab back there. Don't ask me to explain what I mean. The point is, I can't read them, can't scry for them. Sometimes it's like they're, I don't know, ghosts. You poke and you go right through. Other times, they're like a solid mountain, so big the sun itself can't climb over them. So I don't know, is my answer. Ta was squinting across at him. You say all that to the captain? I don't know if Quick Ben's dead or alive, Sergeant. But if I was to wager on it, well, I can think of a few hundred bone hunters happy to go against me. More than a few hundred, in fact. But if I was to take that bet to Hedge or Fiddler... Bottle shook his head, slapped at something biting his neck. You're wagering that he's dead? No, I'm betting he's alive. And I'm betting more than that. I'm betting he's still in this game. The sergeant suddenly grinned. Great to have you back, Mage. Not so fast, Tar. Sergeant, I mean. Don't forget, I didn't see him at the end there. And from what I've heard, it was ugly. The ugliest. So that's why I'm not making any wagers. Good knows what Fid ever saw in you, soldier. Go on, get out of my sight. When he'd exchanged places in the line with Korab, Cuttle fell in on his left. Listen, who in Hood's name am I these days? Fisher himself? What? No, it's something Korix said. Which thing? The thing about the piss drinker? Fid doesn't make his own cards, Cuttle. He's not that kind of deckmonger. So, about booty, soldier. That thing about booty. I think that was sarcasm. On his right, Smiles grunted, but offered nothing more. That's just it, Cuttle said. Now, it was Dasemultor who really came down on the whole pillaging stuff. We were conquering, not raiding. When you occupy a city, it's bad practice to loot and rape the citizens. Riles them, and before you know it, your occupying garrison soldiers start getting murdered on night patrol. So we weren't in the habit of it anyway. But even then, we still had a chance to get rich. Every company got itself a scribe, and everything was portioned out. Collected weapons and armor, horses, all that. Winning a battle meant bonuses. All very well, Cuttle, nodded Bottle. But we here got us a temple treasury. The payrolls are still being maintained. The fact is, Sapper, we're all stinking rich. Assuming we live to get it. That's always how it is. I don't see your point. The sapper's small eyes glittered. Tell me, he said in a rough voice. Do you give a knacked arse about it? Do you, Bottle? He considered. 4, 5, 7 strides. No, he admitted. But then I never did care much. Not in it for wealth. You young, aye. It's the adventure that tugs you along. But you see, get to a certain age. Seen enough of all that's out there, and you start thinking about your life when it's all done with. You start thinking about some cozy cottage, or maybe a decent room above a decent tavern. Aye, you know it'll probably never be, but you dream about it anyway. And that's where all the coin comes in. And? His voice dropped lower. Bottle, I ain't thinking past next week. I ain't thought about my pay in months. You hearing me? No cottage, no tavern, no nice little fisher boat, or, gods forbid, a garden. None of it. That's because we're the walking dead, right? I thought so, what with what Fid said the other night, but now I don't. Curious, Bottle eyed the sapper. Go on, then. Cuttle shrugged, as if suddenly uncomfortable. Something's happened to us, that's all. The bone hunters. Maybe it was invading Lether. Maybe it was Malaz City or even Yucatan. I don't know. Look at us. We're an army, not thinking about loot. Why do you think Korik went and mocked Smiles here about charging for her piss? Because he's broke, Smiles answered. And jealous. It's because no one cares about silver and gold, or buying stinking estates, or breeding horses, or taking up sea trades. We're probably the only army in the world that doesn't. Smiles snorted. Hold on, Sapper. You don't think that when we've chopped up whoever and we're standing there on that battlefield, Don't you think we're going to start cutting off fingers and all the rest? Loading up on torques and rings and decent swords and whatever?
No, I don't, Smiles.
I think I agree with Cuttle on this one, said Bottle. Then again, maybe you will.
Why should I? She retorted. I wasn't talking about me at all.
Another first, Bottle muttered.
Oh, I'm going to walk around checking bodies, I, she said, nodding. Find one still breathing and slit goes the throat. Rings and shit? Forget it.
Just what I've been saying, Cuttle said, and he fixed wide eyes upon Bottle.
It's exactly it, Bottle. This army has gone insane.
Fid's captain now, Balm growled. What more do you need to know? He'll do us right. He was a bridge burner, wasn't he? Look at his old squad, lads. Didn't lose a damned one of them. If that ain't the kind eye of a god looking down, what is?
Widdershins crowded up behind Throat Slitter, Dead Smell, and the sergeant.
Did any of you hear Bottle back there? That stuff about our name?
Throat Slitter scowled.
What?
He was asking about how we got our name.
So?
So I just think, well, I think it's important. I think Bottle knows something, but he's keeping it quiet.
Bottled up? Dead Smell asked. Throat Slitter's high-pitched laugh triggered curses up and down the line. The assassin hissed under his breath.
Sorry, that just came out. So give him a shake, Wid, pressed Dead Smell, until it all gushes out. He's got a cork somewhere. Go and find it.
Throat Slitter snorted and then choked as he held down another squeal.
Stop that, Dead Smell, Balm ordered. I mean it.
But I've just scratched the surface of possibilities, Sergeant. You saw what Cuttle went and did to Corrick. I'll lay you out, Dead Smell.
You can't do that. You're our sergeant.
Meaning I can do it, idiot.
Widdershins said,
Bottle's a mage, just like me. We got us a common bond. Think I might talk to him after all. There's something he's not saying, I know it.
Well, mused Dead Smell, the man did somehow survive the Nauru kitchen tent, so that's kind of impressive.
And he came in with Captain Ruth and Gud. There's an inner circle, you see. I suspected it from way back.
Widdershins, you may have hit on something there, said Dead Smell. People in the know, knowing something.
More than us, right.
Probably got it all mapped out, too. Even how we're going to get across this desert and then take down another empire, just like we took down Leather.
Just like we crushed the Whirlwind, too, and got ourselves out of Malar's city. So now you ain't making fun of me no more, Dead Smell, are you?
As one, the four Marines twisted round to glare at the squad trudging behind them. Sergeant Tar's brows lifted.
You hearing this, Tar? Balm called back.
Not a word of it, Balm.
Good.
Facing forward again, Widdershins tried to press even closer.
Listen, he whispered. We can work out who's in the know. Fid and Ruth and Gud.
And Bottle, said Dead Smell, because he's Fid's shaved knuckle.
Masangilani?
What? Really?
Another one attached to the adjunct's retinue. They didn't kill her horse, did you know that? They kept her, two of them, in fact.
Widdershins rubbed at his face.
Gets cold with the sun down, don't it? Then there's Lostara Yil, who did that shadow dance. That one for sure. Who else?
Keneb, but he's dead, said Balm. Quick Ben, too. Widdershins barked a low laugh.
I'm with Bottle on that one. He's out there somewhere, maybe with Gessler and Stormy.
Of course, Balm cut in. Gess and Stormy, and don't they have the runts with them?
Sin and Grobai. Widdershins nodded.
Could be the whole conspiracy right there, then. The inner circle I was talking about.
The conniving cabal, said Dead Smell.
Aye.
The secret sneaks.
Just so.
The shifty-eyed sentinels of truth.
Throat Slitter's laugh pierced the night. Cinta winced at the cry behind them.
Gods, I wish he'd stop doing that.
Nothing very funny about this, Baron Gruck agreed. But then it's Throat Slitter, isn't it? That man would laugh over his dying sister. He shook his head. I don't get people like him, taking pleasure in misery, in torture, all that. What's to laugh about? Talk about a messed up mind.
She glanced at him curiously. His face was lit in the green glow of the jade spears, ghoulish, ethereal.
What's eating you, Badan?
That conspiracy of Wid's. He shot her a suspicious look. It's got to include you, Cinta, don't it?
Like Hood it does.
You had a chat with Masangilani, and...
He nodded towards the wagon, rocking and creaking just ahead of them.
Your sister.
We was just trying to work out stuff to help the adjunct.
Because you knew something. Those feelings you get. You knew we were in trouble long before the lizards showed up.
Little good it did us. Don't you see? I knew, but I didn't know. Do you have any idea how helpless that made me feel?
So what's coming, Cinta?
No idea. And that's just how I want it.
She tapped her helm.
All quiet, not a whisper. You think I'm in some inner circle? You're wrong.
Fine, he said. Forget it.
The silence stretched between them, and to Cinta it felt like a cocoon or a web they were snared in. Struggling just made it worse. In the hills high above the savannah of her homeland, there were ancient tombs carved into cliff faces. Barely past her first blooding, she journeyed with her sister and two others to explore those mysterious caves. Nothing but dust. The stone sarcophagi were stacked a dozen to each chamber, and Cinta remembered standing in the relative chill, one hand holding a makeshift torch, and in the flickering, wavering orange light, staring at the lowest coffin in a stack rising before her. Other peoples buried their dead instead of gifting the corpse to the vulture goddess and her get, or sealed them beneath heavy lids of stone, and she remembered thinking, with a chill rippling through her,
but what if they got it wrong? What if you weren't dead?
In the years since, she'd heard horrifying tales of hapless people buried alive, trapped within coffins of stone or wood. Life in the barracks was rife with stories intended to make one shiver, worse than the haranguing threats from priests behind a pulpit, and everyone knew those ones were doing it for the coin, and all that delicious sharing out of fear.
And now I feel as if I'm about to wake up from a long sleep, from my mouth a sighing breath, but all I see is darkness, all I hear is a strange dull echo all around me. And I reach up and find cold, damp stone. It was the drops that awakened me, a condensation of my own breathing. I'm about to wake up to find that I have been buried alive.
The terror would not let her go.
This desert belongs to the dead. Its song is the song of dying.
In the wagon, lumbering a few strides ahead, sat her sister, head lolling as if asleep.
Was it that easy for her?
That leg was slow in mending, and now that they were in this lifeless place, no healer could help her. She must be in pain. Yet she slept.
While we march. The deserter never deserted after all. Who could have guessed she'd find something inside, something that reached out beyond, outside her damned self? We can never know, can we? Can never know someone else, even one of our own blood. Kiss Weir. You should have run, limped, done whatever you needed to do. I could manage all of this, I could, if I knew you were safe, far away.
She thought back to when her sister had appeared in the company of the Kundril, that ragged, wretched huddle of survivors. Young mothers, old mothers, crippled warriors, unblooded children, elders tottering like the harbingers of shattered faith. And there she was, struggling with a makeshift crutch, the kind one saw among broken veterans on foreign streets as they begged for alms.
Gods below, at least the Malazan Empire knew how to honor their veterans.
You don't just up and forget them, ignore them, step over them in the gutters. You honor them. Even the kin of the lost get coin and a holy day in their honor. There were, she knew, all kinds of coffins. All kinds of ways of finding out you've been buried alive. How many people dreaded opening their eyes, opening them for real,
How many were terrified of what they would find? That stone box, that solid darkness, the immovable walls and lid and the impossible weight. Her sister would not meet her eye, would not even speak to her, not since Kiswear's return to the ranks. But return she did, and soldiers saw that, saw and realized that she'd gone to get the Cundrill to find help for that awful day. They understood, too, how Kiswear must feel, there in that ruined haggle of survivors. Aye, she'd sent the rest of them to their deaths, enough to destroy the strongest among them, aye. But look at her. Seems able to bear it. The broken leg? She was riding hood bent for leather, friends. Would have been in that fatal charge, too, if not for her horse going down. No, they now looked on Kiswear with a seriousness to their regard that spoke tomes about finally belonging, that spoke of seeing on her the fresh scars from the only rite of passage worth respecting, surviving with the coin paid in full for the privilege. Well, that is my sister, isn't it? No matter what, she will shine. She will shine. Kiswear could feel her teeth grinding, on the edge of cracking, as the wagon clunked over yet another rock, and with breath held she waited for the rush of stunning pain. Up from the bones of her leg, spreading like bright flowers through her hips, rising through her torso like a tree with 1,000 stabbing branches and 10,000 needled twigs. Higher still, the mad serrated leaves unfurling in her skull, lacerating her brain. She rode the manic surge, the insane growth of agony, and then, as it pulsed back down, as it ebbed, she slowly released her sour breath. She stank of suffering. She could taste it on her swollen tongue. She leaked it out on the grimy boards beneath her. They should have left her behind, a lone tent in the rubbish of the abandoned camp. That would have been an act of mercy. But since when did armies think about that? Their whole business was the denial of mercy, and like a watermill, the huge stone wheel of destruction rolled on and on. No one allowed to get off. On what? She found herself grinning. On pain of death, that's what. Staring at her own knees, at the thick bundling of myriad skins surrounding her splintered leg, hair hanging down, hiding from her eyes Badan Gruk, Cinta, and all the rest, so useless in their clumping along, so bitter in all the ghosts they now carried, the weight bowing them down. Was it pores or kindly? Yes, pores. Grow that hair, woman. Or was it cut it? I can't remember. How can I not remember? Was it that long ago? Pores, pretending to be kindly. Where does that kind of courage come from? That audacity? That knowing look will be in his eye right up until he's shoved through Hood's gate. It will, won't it? How I admire people like that. How I wanted to be like them. Badan Gruk, take a lesson from pores, I beg you. No more of the sad eyes, the hurt look. I see it, and I want to stab deeper, lash out. I want to make true all your miserable worries, all those wounds upon your heart. Let's see them bleed. The wagon jarred beneath her. She gasped. Flowers and trees, leaves of fire igniting behind her eyes. No time to think. Every thought tried running, only to explode in the forest. Bursting awake all the leaves, high in the canopy, and every thought wings away, like birds into the sky. The leg was infected. There was fever, and nothing anyone could do about it. Herbs fought the good war, or they would if there were any. If she asked for them, if she told someone. Pastes and poultices, elixirs and unguents. All the ranks of grim-faced soldiers, banners waving, marching into disease's grinning face. No one's allowed to get off, on pain of death, aye. Stay right here, this rocking wagon, the rank sweat of the oxen so sweet in our nostrils. We got us a war, comrades. Can't stop and chat. We got us a war, and no one's allowed to get off. No one's allowed to get off. No one's allowed to... Badan grunted and looked up. Shit,
said Cinta, starting forward. Kissware had been leaning forward over her thighs, one leg dangling off the wooden tail, the other splinted straight, thrust out at an angle. She'd just fallen back, head cracking as it bounced on the slats. Cinta clambered onto the wagon.
"Gods below, she's on fire! Badan, get us a cutter, fast!"
Straightening, she faced forward and leaned over the bundles of gear.
"Ruffle, pull this thing over to one side! Hurry! Out of the line!"
"Aye, Sergeant."
"They're pulling out a line, Sergeant. Should we go back and see what's up?"
Hellion scowled.
"Just march, Corporal."
It was dark, but not so dark as it maybe should be. People glowed green, but then could be that was how it always was when she didn't drink.
"No wonder I drink." "Listen, all of you," she said. "Keep an eye out."
"For what?"
Brethy asked.
"For a tavern, of course, idiot."
They'd gotten two transfers from the 7th squad. A pair of swords, one of them with a bad knee and the other one with the face of a gutsick horse.
Limp's the name of one of them, but which one? That other one. Crump. A sapper? Is Crump the sapper? But sappers ain't worth much now, are they? Big enough to be a sword, though. Unless Crump is the one with a bad knee. Imagine a sapper with a bad knee. Set the charge and run. Well, hobble. Fast as you can. Guess you looking like a horse was some kind of joke, huh? Sappers. Nothing but a bad idea that stayed bad. Bust up one leg on all of them. That'd make the breed extinct quick enough.
Aye, Limp's the sapper. Crump's the other one. Crump goes the knee, Limp goes the sapper. But wait, which one's got the bad knee again? I could turn round, I suppose. Turn round and say, take a look. Which one's limping? Get the limper sorted and I got Crump, meaning the sapper's the other one, with the bad knee. Limp, then. He's named Limp on account of the bad knee of his buddies, since he has to help the fool along all the time. But then, if he got that name at the start, why, he'd not make it as a soldier at all. He'd have been drummed out or planted behind a desk. So the sapper didn't run fast enough from some fuse. That's how he earned his name. Got the name Crump on account of a crumpling knee. Now I get it. Phew! But what's the point of a horse with a bad knee?
It's getting cold, Sergeant.
Hellion's scowl deepened.
What do you want me to do about it, fart in your face?
No, was just saying. Oh, and Limp's lagging. We should have stuck him on the wagon.
Who are you again?
I may be, Sergeant. Been with you since the beginning.
Which door?
What?
The street we lived on in Kartul City. Which door was you in?
I ain't from Kartul, Sergeant. I meant the beginning of the squad. That's what I meant. Aran, 7 cities. The first time we marched across a hood-rotting desert.
Back to Yagatan? No wonder I'm so thirsty. Got water in that jug there, soldier?
Just my piss, Sergeant.
Lucky you ain't a woman. Try pissing into a bottle when you're a woman. Yagatan, gods below, how many times do we got to take that place?
We ain't marching to Yagatan, Sergeant. We're... Oh, never mind. It's a desert for sure, though. Cold.
Corporal Touchless?
Sergeant?
What you got in that jug there?
Piss.
Who's selling that stuff anyway? Bloody genius.
Maybe, said. Heard the quartermaster was tying bladders on the Kundril stallions. Hellion frowned.
They'd explode. Why would he do that? And more to the point, how? Stick your hand up, it's...
Not the horse's bladder, Sergeant. Water skins, right? Cow bladders, tied to the stallion's cock.
Duck, you mean?
What?
Horses hate cocks, but they don't mind ducks. But that bladder would slow 'em down something awful. Quite the farm where you grew up, maybe.
I ain't fooled, you know. said Maybe, leaning close. But I see the point, right? You're keeping us entertained. It's like a game, pieces jumping every which way. She eyed him.
Oh, I'm just fooling with you, am I?
He met her gaze, and then his eyes shied away. Sorry, Sergeant. Feeling it, huh? Pelion said nothing.
Glowing green, aye. And all those rocks and shards out there where the spiders are. Tiny eyes all heaped up, all watching me pass. I'm sober, can't pretend they're not there, not any more. And not a tavern in sight. This is going to be bad, very bad. Hear that? She asked. That was a damned hyena.
That was throat slitter, Sergeant.
He killed a hyena? Good for him. Where's Balgrid anyway?
Dead.
Damned slacker. I'm going to sleep. Corporal, you're in charge.
Can't sleep now, Breathless objected. We're walking, Sergeant.
Best time for it, then. Wake me when the sun comes up.
Now that ain't fair how she does that. Breathless grunted.
You hear about them all the time, though. Those veterans who can sleep on the march.
He mused and then grunted a second time.
Didn't know she was one of them.
Sober now, Maybe muttered. That's what's new with her.
Did you see her and Herb and Tar heading back into the trench? I'd just about given up, and then I saw her, and she pulled me along as if I was wearing chains round my neck. I had nothing left, me and Touchy. Remember Touchy? Aye, what of it? We were finished. When I saw Quick Ben go down, it was like someone carved out my gut. I went all hollow inside. Suddenly, I knew it was time to die.
You were wrong, said Maybe in a growl.
We got us a good sergeant, is what I'm saying.
Maybe nodded and glanced back at Crump. You listening, soldier? Don't mess it up. The tall, long-faced man with the strangely wide-spaced eyes blinked confusedly.
They stepped on my cusses, he said. Now I ain't got any more.
Can you use that sword on your belt, sapper?
What? This? No. Why would I want to do that? We're just marching.
Lagging behind, breath coming in harsh gasps, Limp said,
Crump had a bag of munitions. Stuck his brain in there, too. For safekeeping. It all went up, throwing Naruk everywhere. He's just an empty skull now, maybe.
So, he can't fight? What about using a crossbow?
Never seen him try one of those. But fight? Crump fights. Don't worry about that.
Well, with what then? That stupid bush knife?
He uses his hands, maybe.
Well, that's just great then.
We're just marching, said Crump again,
and then he laughed. Herb glanced back at the squad, trudging 5 paces behind his own. She had nothing to drink now. She was waking up. To who she really was. And maybe she didn't like what she saw. Wasn't that what drinking was all about to begin with? He rubbed the back of his neck, faced forward again. Sober now, eyes clear. Clear enough to see... Well, it wasn't like she'd really shown any interest. And besides, did he really want to get tangled with someone like that? Standing up only to probably fall down again? It was a narrow path for people like her, and they needed to want to walk it. If they didn't, off they went again, sooner or later, every time. Of course, if what Fid had said was true, what did any of it even matter? They were the walking dead, looking for a place to finish up with all the walking. So in the meantime, if there was a chance at anything, why not take it? She'd not be serious about it, though, would she? She'd just mock the whole idea of love, of what he would end up cutting out and slapping down wet and red on the table between them. She'd just laugh. He wasn't brave enough for that. In fact, he wasn't brave at all about anything. Not fighting Naruk or Lethary or Whirlwind fanatics. Every time he had to draw his sword, he went cold as ice inside. Loose, quaking, dread shivering out from his stomach to steal the heat from his limbs. He drew his sword, expecting to die, and die poorly. But he'd do what he could to keep her alive. Always had. Always would. Usually she was too drunk to even see it, or maybe she was so used to him being there when it counted that he was no different from a stone wall for her to throw her back against. But wasn't even that enough for him? It would have to be, because he didn't have the courage for anything more. Being the Walking Dead didn't have a thing to do with bravery. It was just a way of looking at the time left, of ducking down and pushing on and not complaining. He could do that. He'd been doing that all his life, in fact. "I've been the Walking Dead all along, and I didn't even know it." The thought left him weakened, as if some hidden knife had just pushed deep inside, piercing his soul. "I've been telling myself this was being alive. This here. This hiding. Wishing. Dreaming. Wanting. And all the while, what does anyone else see when they look at me? Quiet herb. Not much going on in there, is there? But a fair soldier. Adequate. Made sergeant, sure. But don't ever think he'll go higher. Hasn't got it inside, you see. It's quiet as a cave in there. But you got to, well, admire him. He's a man without troubles. He's a man who lives it easy, if you know what I mean. That Sergeant Herb, he'll do until a better sergeant comes along. Hiding ain't living. Hiding's just walking dead. He looked up into the jade-lit night sky, studied those grim slashes cleaving the darkness. Huge now, seeming ready to slice into the face of this very world. Herb shivered. But if I'm the walking dead, why am I still so afraid? Corporal Clasp dropped back from her position alongside Herb until Saltlick, who'd been taking up the rear, reached her and she fell in beside him.
"Can I have a quiet word with you?"
she asked. He glanced over, blinked.
"I could be quiet."
"I'd noticed, Saltlick. Is that how it is in this squad?"
"What do you mean?"
She nodded ahead.
"Sergeant Herb, you and him are the same. You don't say anything. Don't give yourselves away. You know, we all knew there was a kind of elite group, squads and a few heavies. Somehow all closer to Fiddler back when he was a sergeant, closer than the rest of us. We knew it. We could see it. Fiddler and round him, Gessler and Stormy, Balm and Hellion, Cord and Shard, and Herb. With Quick Ben dropping in and then Hedge. And finally, some of you heavies, Shortnose, Mayfly, Flashwit, you. I know it was all about Fiddler, and the ones he drew in around him, the ones he picked."
Saltlick was staring at her now. Clasp grimaced.
"Look at my soldiers," she said under her breath. "Look at Sad. You know what she is? A damn Semk witch. Semk. You know what she does when she gets ready for a fight? Never mind. You'll see for yourself, assuming we survive this desert. Then there's Burnt Rope. Sapper. But he surprised me at the trench. So did our cutter. You know, he once went and sought out Gessler and Stormy. Fellow Falaris, right? We sent him. We sent Laptwirl to Gess and Stormy to test them out. To see if we could get in."
"Get in?"
"To those elites. To the insiders, right? Well, he didn't get anywhere. They were friendly enough, and the three of them got drunk. It was in Letharas. Got beastly drunk and hired up a whole whorehouse of women. But Lap kept a bit of himself cold sober, and when he judged it right, he just went and asked. Asked in. You know what Gessler said?"
Saltlick shook his head.
"The bastard denied it to Lap's face. Said it didn't exist. Lied to Lap's face. That's how we know there's no getting in."
Saltlick continued studying her.
"So," he said after a few strides, "why are you telling me?"
"Herb's one of the finest sergeants we Marines got left to us. We know that. In fact, it's got us pissing in our boots. The pressure's getting unbearable, Saltlick. We can't get a word out of him. And you can see in his eyes, he's damned disappointed to be saddled with us."
"All right," said Saltlick.
She frowned up at him.
"All right, what?"
"You're in, Corporal. You and your soldiers. You're all in."
"Really? Are you sure?"
"You're in."
Smiling, she moved ahead again, paused to glance back and nod. He nodded back, saw the lightness in her step, watched as she leaned in close to Laptwirl, and the two soldiers spoke in whispers and gestures, and a moment later Sad and Burnt Rope closed up to listen in. Faces turned, looked back at him. He waved.
I can't wait till Flashwit hears this one.
Saltlick shifted uncomfortably. He'd sweated a lot in his tent, and now his sack was chafing. He could almost feel the skin peeling off.
Fuck, that stings. Better air out my balls tomorrow.
The sergeant was glaring at her, gesturing. Flashwit frowned. Mayfly nudged her.
Wants to talk to you.
Why?
He has 7 questions. How would I know? Go on, princess. The idiot lost his whole squad. He probably wants to try and explain, so he doesn't get a knife in his back.
I wouldn't stick a knife in his back, Flashwit said, shaking her head, no matter what he did.
Really?
If he killed them all and told me about it, I'd just break his neck. A knife in the back, that's cowardly.
No, it ain't, Mayfly objected. It's making a point. Victim's not worth a look in the eye when you kill him. Victim's not supposed to know what ended it, just that it ended. And there's Hood's gate calling him.
But sometimes you miss.
Better go, he's getting cross.
Grunting, Flashwit made her way up to Sergeant Gauntye. Wasn't a friendly face, that one, but a face a person would remember, anyway, for all the wrong things in it.
Sergeant? You don't know the hand talk, soldier.
What talk?
Oh, that. Yeah, I know it. Mostly. Advance, stop, hit the ground, fight, go fuck yourself. Like that.
A Marine should know how to put together whole sentences, Flashwit.
Yeah? I'm a heavy sergeant.
Tell me about the girly one.
Using my hands? Can't, Sergeant. I mean, I'd have to try and ask, what girly one? And I don't know how to do that.
Skull Death. Talk to me, soldier, with words, but keep your voice down.
I ain't never raised my voice, not once, Sergeant, in my whole life.
Skull Death.
What about him?
Why is he so girly, for one?
He's a prince, Sergeant, from some tribe in 7 cities. He's the heir, in fact.
Then what in Hood's name is he doing here?
She shrugged.
They sent him to grow up somewhere else, with us, to see the world and all that.
Gauntye bared crooked teeth.
Bet he's regretting that.
No reason why, Flashwit said. Not yet, anyway.
So he grew up all pampered and perfumed, then?
I suppose.
So how did he get that stupid name?
Flashwit squinted at the sergeant.
Begging your pardon, Sergeant, but where was you and your squad? Back at the trench, I mean.
He shot her a vicious look.
What difference does that make?
Well, you couldn't have not seen him then. Skull Death. He jumps high, you see. He was the only one of us cutting Naruk's throats, right? Jumps high, like I said. See those 8 notches on his left wrist?
Those burns?
Aye, one for each Naruk he personally throat cut.
Gauntye snorted.
A liar, too, then. About what I figured.
But he never counted, Sergeant. Never does. 8 is what we saw him do. Those who saw him at all, I mean. We talked about it. Comparing and all that. 8. So we told him and he burned those marks on his wrist. When we asked him how many he gutted, he said he didn't know. When we asked him how many he hamstrung, he didn't know that either. The rest of us couldn't come up with numbers on those. Lot more than 8, though. But since we seen him burn himself, we decided not to tell him how many. He'd be one big burn now, right? And since he's so pretty, well, that'd be a shame.
She fell silent then, to catch her breath. She'd broken 3 or so ribs in the fight, so talking hurt. More than breathing, which hurt bad enough. Talking was worse. That had been the most words she'd used all at once since the battle.
Draw first and Mayfly, said Gauntye. And you, all heavies. Hey, Sergeant? Get back in line, Flashwit.
She gave him a bright smile that seemed to startle him, and then fell back, past one-armed Corporal Rib, who eyed her with something like suspicion, and then Draw First and Skull Death before positioning herself beside Mayfly.
Well?
Mayfly asked.
You was wrong, Flashwit said with deep satisfaction.
About what?
Ha! He only asked 6 questions.
Gaunt-Eye was throwing more looks back at his squad.
Who's he want now?
Mayfly wondered. And then the sergeant pointed at Skull Death.
You blow me one more kiss, soldier, and I'll wrap your guts round your hood-damned neck.
Well, no,
Flashwit muttered. Mayfly nodded.
The prince ain't missed yet, has he?
Hedge could hear howling laughter behind him, and the breath gusted from him.
Listen to that, Bavedict. Fid slapped him up and down all right. I knew it.
The leathery alchemist tugged again on the ox lead.
Alas, Commander, I don't know what you mean by that.
Bet he gave him the old Walking Dead speech. It's like cutting shackles, that one. There was a night, you see, when Dujek One-Arm himself came into the Bridgeburner's camp. We was working pale then, the tunnels. I never shifted so many boulders in my life. He came in, right, and told us what we already knew.
Hedge drew off his scorched leather cap and scratched at his fresh-shaven scalp.
We was the Walking Dead. Then he left. Left us to figure out what we were going to do about it.
What did you do?
Hedge tugged on the cap again.
Well, most of us, died. Before we even had a chance. But Whiskey Jack, he wasn't going to turn his back on any of it. And Quick Ben and Callum, gods, they just wanted to start the killing. You ain't got nothing to lose once you're the Walking Dead.
I do admit, Commander, that I don't much like being described in that manner.
Got cold feet now?
I always appreciate your wit, sir, said Bavedict. But cold feet are precisely what I don't want, if you understand me.
So buck up, then. Besides, what Fid had to say to his bone hunters, well, that's up to him. Got nothing to do with us Bridgeburners.
Presumably because the Bridgeburners have been walking dead since, pale.
Hedge slapped him on the back.
Exactly. It's not like it's an exclusive club, right?
Sir, ventured Bavedict, was it just this afternoon that you were complaining how your old friend had turned his back on you? That you were feeling like a leper?
Things are easier when you're dead. I mean, for him. He could put me away on some shelf in his skull and leave me there.
Hedge gestured carelessly with one hand.
I get it. I always did. I just don't like it. I feel insulted. I mean, I'm back. Anyone can see that. Fidge should be happy. And Quick Ben, well, you saw what he did at the battle before he skipped out. Went and did a taste ren on us. Next time we meet, him and me are going to have some words, we are.
My point, sir, was that Fiddler has actually drawn himself closer to you, if indeed he spoke of his soldiers being among the walking dead.
You might think that, Hedge said, nodding. But you'd be wrong. When you're dead, Bavedict, you ain't got no brothers. Nothing holds you together. At least, not that I ever seen. Aye, the dead Bridgeburners are all together, but that's just old memories, chaining them all to each other. It's just ghostly echoes from back when they were alive. I'm telling you, Alchemist, keep doing all you can to stay alive for as long as you can, because the dead got no friends.
Bavedict sighed.
I do hope you're wrong, Commander. Did you not say the realm of the dead has changed? That the Reaper himself surrendered the unliving throne? And that this Whiskey Jack...
You never knew him. Whiskey Jack, I mean. So you'll just have to take me at my word. He's a stubborn bastard. Probably the stubbornest bastard ever to walk this world. So maybe you got a point. Maybe you can make it all different. If anyone can, it's him.
Another slap on Bavedict's shoulder.
You gave me something to think about there. Fed never did that, you know. In fact, I can't remember what he ever did for me.